Okay, let's see here now. I'm going to do more reading tonight than usual because, like I was telling Kevin, one of the things that's happened to me since I've started doing these steps these weeks is I have become aware of how much is in the 12 and 12. There is so much in this book. The big book has the answers to everything, but there's a lot of things that goes into detail in the 12 and 12, which the big book doesn't. It explains things within the steps that we wouldn't ordinarily hear. So if you have an opportunity, it doesn't matter how long you're sober, could be right at the beginning or it could be where I'm at. I really enjoyed doing this, by the way. It was very good for me. I've learned a lot about myself that I didn't know before. So before I get into it, I want to read, I think I have everything here so you don't have to say, duh, now what's she doing? Okay. To certain newcomers and to those one-time agnostics who still cling to the AA group as their higher power, claims for the power of prayer may, despite all the logic and experience and proof of it, still be unconvincing or quite objectionable. Those of us who once felt this way can certainly understand and sympathize. We well remember how something deep inside of us kept rebelling against the idea of bowing before any God. Many of us had strong logic, too, which proved there was no God whatever. What about all the accidents, sickness, cruelty, and injustice in the world? What about all those unhappy lives which were the direct result of unfortunate birth and uncontrollable circumstances? Surely there could be no justice in this scheme of things and therefore no God at all. Well, in the 11th step, there are three parts: self-examination, meditation, and prayer. And in the self-examination is something that we do every day. We go through the day, and when things crop up, we learn how to deal with them on a daily basis. We can either, what I always did was, I always opened mouth and inserted foot. And I learned how to wait 24 hours before I did a lot of the things that I did. And in fact, at the end of this talk tonight, I have a current open your mouth, insert foot that I'll share with you. Because, you know, if I don't share myself with you, then you can't really understand some of the things that I'm saying. And so I try to, go back and think about things that I did that have to do with these. Constant evaluation of my daily living. In the beginning, it was hard. The defects were outstanding, or really standing out. It took me a while before I started to see why I was angry or resentful in any given day. That is what having a sponsor is all about. Calling her and telling her what happened, and having her tell me to wait to do any action. Because in a day or two, my thinking would change if I pray about it, asking God to show me what I should do next. Because of my open-minded and willingness, the answer always came. I could have heard many ways something said by someone. Oh dear, there I go with writing something that doesn't make any sense. Okay, I could have heard something many ways. You know, somebody said something and I took it as something else. I heard it differently than the way it was said. And when we're in the middle of this muck, and we believe that God works through us, which I always say he does, but in the beginning, even if you don't believe that, sometimes, you're wondering, what is the answer? What should I do? And like my sponsor said, wait a day or two and see what happens. And so there are ways that we're talked to, there where God talks to us. Through the television, somebody might say something on TV one night or one day that say, wow, that's it, that's the answer. listening to the radio. And I think I've told you about the incident with the radio and the fire in the dryer, and then having the fire truck come down Liberty Street with me worrying about the dryer, and then on the radio came in that there was a field fire on 2nd and Liberty. So I knew I could keep going that night. And hearing nearby conversations, somebody might say something that'll click in your mind, a word or a sentence or something that makes you realize what you need to do. Or the thought just pops into your head. And you just know. It's pretty hard. If we read over step 11 in the 12 and 12, it says sometimes we can rationalize. Something goes on in our head, and we can rationalize that it is the right thing to do when it really isn't the right thing to do. It's very hard to learn how to tell the difference. But always talking to somebody first, and like I said, especially your sponsor, and see if it makes any sense to her, and maybe if it does, it's something that you can do. So I'm giving some examples tonight. I wanted to quit my job when I first got sober. I had a good job. I was very, very fortunate. God bless you. You okay? Okay. And I told my sponsor, because what was happening is I was sober now, and I was starting to change, and I was seeing things that I didn't like in sobriety. And my boss, I didn't agree with things that he said, but I didn't have the courage to tell him, and before I was drinking, so it didn't matter. But I wanted to quit my job, and my sponsor said, no, do not do that today. And just wait. Give it some time before you do that. And thank God I didn't, because I retired from there 31 years later. And if I would have quit my job, it would have been a bad thing to do. So it's always important, and I've heard this and you've heard it too, wait 24 hours before you make a final decision on something. And that is so hard for me to do even today. To wait 24 hours. If I'm mad at somebody and want to tell them, I go right to it. And then on the 24 or 48 hours later, I'm back on the phone apologizing. So, another thing too of starting college. And my boss suggested I start college. I was afraid to start. Who would want me at 35 years old to start college? And would they even accept me? I had no idea what the routine was for getting into college. But I did it, and I went to school for 20 years. It became my social life. But I had to think it through. I was really afraid to start college. In fact, I was so afraid that I sent my oldest daughter to Gannon to pick up my registration. I was just so afraid. Now, another thing that happened to me was my sister's story. When I got sober, my sister, she's a wonderful girl, I love her today, but my first year of sobriety, I wasn't a very good sister, I was a terrible daughter, I was a terrible mother. There wasn't much good about me when I first came to AA. My sister, every Saturday morning, my sister would call me, and we would talk, and she would tell me what a terrible daughter I had been, a terrible sister I had been. And I think I told you a week or two ago about the time that I quit talking to my mother for a while, and my sister was involved in all of that. So I told my sponsor, I hate to talk to her on the telephone because she doesn't see anything different in me, and she's always telling me what an awful person I am. And I don't know what to say back to her. And Carol said, well, what are you listening for? Don't talk to her. Just tell her kindly, I love you, but don't call me anymore unless you have something good to say, because I can't keep listening to you tearing me down. It stunts my growth, because it takes me a day or two to get over a telephone conversation with you. When after I retired, from GE. I was home about 2 years and I got very bored. I couldn't stand it anymore. I couldn't stand taking care of a husband, a dog, a cat, a bird. And that wasn't my life. I had never stayed home, ever. You know, even when I was 14 years old when I went to work. And I'd bring home the money. I worked as a cloak, a coat person at a bowling alley. And in those days, you know, back then, this would be the middle 50s, I even walked home from the, after the bowling league was done at 11:30, and then I'd bring all my change and all my money home and I put it on the counter. It was Thursday night. My mother got paid on Friday. And then we would just split up the money between the four of us. You know, my sister could maybe use a quarter. My brother could use a quarter. I mean, we're not talking about all that much money. But the thing was that I was willing to share. I was willing to share. So there were some good things about me in those days. So after my retirement, I was out at the Villa Convent. I used to spend some time out there, and I had a friend from high school, Sister Anne. She taught me history in high school. And we'd have lunch, and one day she said to me, I told her I was bored, and she said she was talking to a woman from the Barber Center, and they were looking for a person to manage the credit union. It was a very small credit union, but they were looking for somebody. And she said, why don't you go and talk to the person that was looking for somebody? And I did, and I got the job. And I worked there from 2003 until 2014. I was in the right place at the right time when Sister Ann said that. Otherwise, I don't know what I would have done. But these things happen to us. And that's what I'm trying to say. These things, if we're at the right place at the right time, it just happens for us. You know, if we, there are times when I think, oh boy, I just don't want to go to a meeting tonight. But I know better. I can say it, but I don't do it. And then I force myself to go, and something happens at that meeting that had I not been there, it would never have happened. It would either be a new person, it would be a new circumstance, whatever it was, it would be, it would not have happened. I wouldn't have had that wonderful experience had I not done what I was supposed to do. So we always have to remember that too. Say what you mean and mean what you say. I love that phrase because it's so true. Because during when I was drinking, I didn't do that at all. I didn't say what I meant, and I didn't do what I said I would do. I never did it, and so I became unpredictable, unreliable, and in sobriety, I've learned how to be a reliable person. Okay, let me see here. Oh, how I bought my first home, my only home that I had. When I married my husband, I got his unfinished house along with him. But my daughter and her husband were driving by this house one day. I never thought I was going to be able to buy a house. And they called me and said, Mother, this house is you perfect. I can see you in this house. And it wasn't too far away from where they lived. And so I called a real estate lady, and whose husband was in and out of the program. And I asked her to check into it, and I said, I don't know what you're to do, and I don't know what I'm to do, but my kids told me I should take a look at this house. Well, the bottom line is I got the house. Everything fell into place. And I was in awe. I mean, even today, things happen to me, and I'm just in awe. And then the last thing that I wrote about here that any of you in this program that know Ron, my husband, and I, it was a very rocky relationship in the beginning, but I'll tell you what, I've learned a lot about me through the relationship. And there isn't, and you know, a lot of people have a bad opinion of Ron, and a lot of people love him. And I'm one of those that love him. And how I met him is that we were at Mary Lou and Jack Lipinski's wedding reception, and they wouldn't mind me using their name, my daughters and I, and there was one seat left in the whole place, and it was right next to my daughter, right across from me. And that's how we met. And that was the beginning of a story that still exists today. And I'm very grateful for that, because what we do, you know, God puts people in our lives for us to work on ourselves. And not to fix or change, but to work on ourselves so that we can see the defects inside of us through them and work on them to change. And that's what I had to do over time, was change. I learned how to shut my mouth, keep my opinions to myself, live and let live, they call it. And Wendy's not here tonight to hear that. I used to say that to her every week, live and let live, you know. You know, these are the things when I was writing yesterday that stand out for me today, that show me how God works in my life. This is something that God has done for me, working on these 12 steps these past weeks. I have learned things about myself that I never knew. And you know what? They're good things. But I've also, and I've shared with you about things that I've seen in myself that aren't so good, that I've had to work out in the process of all of this. And every time you read this big book, every single time you read it, you read something you never read before. Because as we grow spiritually, we see more deeply what Bill Wilson was saying in this book. And so you always remember that. Always keep that book handy. I mean, it's not something you have to sit and read. When I first got sober, I went to bed every night with the big book. And also the golden books. I think it's the golden books. There's 12 of those, and every one of them represents responsibility, sponsorship. There's 12 different topics, and they're wonderful. They're really wonderful books. They gave me an insight into a few things about me that I didn't know way back then. So. Then the second thing. So that was the self-examination, and then the second thing is meditation. And my meditation has always been the third step prayer. Let me go back up a paragraph here. But if we really pay attention to things that happened in our daily lives, by keeping close contact with God as we understood Him, we can truly see how He has become so much a part of our lives. And then in meditation, page 99, read, it says.
Okay.
Page 99. Okay. Lord, make me a channel of Thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, come on, Beverly, I may bring harmony, that when there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather than to comfort, than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. I don't know. I don't. Is that maybe the prayer of St. Francis? Yeah. Well, at any rate, in this, when they start talking about meditation in step 11, this is what they read. And then it says, whenever you're meditating, to read that. That's one tool that you have, that you can read it slowly and think about what you're reading, you know, and see if it applies to you, or that you even understand what it means. Like, in order to be forgiven, we have to forgive. Well, that's a pretty strong statement. And I think a lot of us, takes a long time to do that one. But once we do it, the thing that I think about is Gordy Robb. When he first came to AA, he hated his wife, absolutely hated her. And his sponsor told him to pray for her. And he said, I can't pray for her. I can't even look at her. How am I going to pray for her? He said, I'm telling you, pray for her. And you'll see what happens. He said, pray for her for 2 weeks and see what happens. Well, what happened was he didn't hate her anymore. He didn't hate her anymore. That prayer is that powerful. If you do it, you know, he said some nasty words about her when he first started praying for her. He called her some nasty names. But, you know, he got past that. And we laughed about it later because I knew him for a lot of years. He was a nice person. And he didn't hate her anymore. And so, let's see here. Now I says page 100 read.
Okay.
I hope you're following me all right here. Page 100. As though lying upon a sunlit beach, let us relax and breathe deeply of the spiritual atmosphere with which the grace of this prayer surrounds us. Let us become willing to partake and be strengthened and lifted up by the sheer spiritual power, beauty, and love of which these magnificent words are the carriers. Let us look now upon the sea and ponder what its mystery is, and let us lift our eyes to the far horizon beyond which we shall seek all those wonders still unseen. Well, some people say that's crazy. Could you get me a napkin to blow my nose? Because my nose is going to drip here in a minute. Thank you, honey. Oh, good. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. And it says in there, totally analyze the prayer. So I made a note of that. And it is good. It covers everything in there about our defects. And as we, you know, by the time we get to step 11, we pretty much know who we are and where we came from and where we're going to go. So, I mean, these are the kinds of things that we have to learn how to do. I was going over my books the other night to see. And I told you there were a lot of things that I've read, a lot of things that I've done through the years. I didn't just get here by just growing, you know, getting old. I did a lot of work. I did everything I was told to do. And I read everything I was told to read. And I've gone through, I was looking the other night to see what books have I read. You know, and one set of books that I read was a set of books by Catherine Marshall. Her husband was, I don't know, he was a minister in Washington, D.C., or head of the ministry, whatever. But she was a beautiful writer. She writes some wonderful, wonderful things that have to do with us in AA. Not that she mentions Alcoholics Anonymous, but once we start reading it, we think, wow, you know, I really understand what she's saying. And then there's another one that I read. I read her book, Sister Joan Chittister. And she writes beautifully, too, on how we live today, how we should live, how we should be, how we should have a relationship with God, which has nothing to do with religion. And then the final, as I told you about last time, the Daily Word. I read that every day. And that's my meditation now, the Daily Word in the morning. So my meditation has always been the third step prayer, asking God to open up my heart and allow Him to work through me. Anytime someone would suggest a spiritual book, I would get it or borrow it. I'd make notes for the things that stood out. And as I said, I must have 100 books at home that have been given to me or loaned to me through the years. And if I really liked the book, I would just go out and buy it so I'd have it. And so if anybody ever wants a list of those books, or come to my house and go through them and see what you could, because every one of them have meaning. You know, it's not just going to meetings that helps. It's all the other steps along with it. You know, we go to meetings for the fellowship because it is a fellowship. You know, I love walking into a meeting because I see, you know, I just love walking into a meeting. Everybody's there. We can give them hugs. They know who we are. They don't care what we did or where we came from. all they care about is love, and that bond and that spiritual feeling is always in a meeting. Always, it's always there. And you can either accept it or not accept it, but if you just keep coming back and keep trying to do the things that you're told to do, that's why I said a sponsor is so important. And get a sponsor that isn't going to tell you what you want to hear, but it's going to tell you what you need to hear, and has some spiritual background, because, and I don't mean a priest or a nun or anything, but somebody who's going to talk about the things that are going on in your life in relationship to God. And so you start thinking like that after a while. Okay, let's see now. In prayers, and this is the final thing in step 11, we get the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. During the day when something comes up, ask for guidance, if it be Thy will. Find a particular prayer that we can say over and over. Now it says again, page 102, read. Okay, 102. As the day goes by, we can pause where situations must be met and decisions made, and renew the simple request, Thy will, not mine, be done. If all these points to our emotional disturbance, if at these points our emotional disturbance happens to be great, we will more surely keep our balance, provided we remember and repeat to ourselves a particular prayer or phrase that has appealed to us in our reading or meditation. Just saying it over and over will often enable us to clear a channel choked up with anger, fear, frustration, or misunderstanding, and permit us to return to the surest help of all, our search for God's will, not our own, in a moment of stress. At these critical moments, if we remind ourselves that it is better to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved, we will be following the intent of step 11. Okay, maybe the answer won't come, but by saying the prayer over and over, comfort sets in, and it really does. It truly, truly does. So that if something needs to be done, the spiritual process will take over, and we will either do something or do nothing, but the peace comes. Now I'm gonna read, as soon as I'm done here, I wanted to make a note about the big book. Beginning at the bottom of, if anybody's taking notes tonight, the big book, the beginning at the bottom of page 85 through page 88, tells us how to live every day with specific instructions. And I've read that for years and years and years, and it really does. It tells us exactly what we should do for today. And that's all we have is today. That's all we have to learn how to do is live today. And that's another hard one, but you just got to pull yourself mentally back into today. I remember when I was a kid, I was 16 years old, and there was something going on in my life. I couldn't remember what it was, but I was in a lot of pain, mental pain. And something came to me that said, go to sleep. There's nothing you can do about it tonight. So go to sleep tonight, and then tomorrow morning when you get up, you can start worrying about it then. And I started to do that. I started to do that, and I do that today. I can put my head on a pillow no matter what's going on, even if I've been a bad girl, but I can still go to sleep because I know tomorrow morning when I get up, it'll be there. And then I'll be able to do something about it, because at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, there's not much you can do about anything. So I've learned how to go to sleep, and that's a wonderful feeling. All right, so I'm going to talk about Mary Elizabeth. There are a lot of you in this room that know about Mary Elizabeth. She's my granddaughter. She's doing a beautiful job in her life. I'm her grandmother, and I mostly stay out of her life. How she lives her life is none of my business. But we've had a situation between her and the family for quite a while. And she has an opinion about it, and I have an opinion about it, and her mother has an opinion about it. So one morning last week, I woke up with a revelation. You know, I get those revelations every once in a while. And I get them and I think, oh my gosh. So I call whoever it is that I got the revelation about, and we talk about it, and you know, it's always good. It's always a good thing. But in this case, it wasn't. I called Mary Elizabeth and I told her what my thinking was, and she didn't say anything. She just listened, and then we hung up. So I woke up with the revelation. I didn't wait 24 hours because this was a negative thing. And I got myself all jammed up. So the next day, I was ashamed, truly ashamed, that I got into somebody's business that was not my business to get into. And so I didn't have the courage to call her up on the telephone and talk to her. So this phone is wonderful for texting, you know. And I don't text very fast either. So it took me a while, but I made an amend through the text. And told her I was very sorry, that I loved her, and I knew what I said was none of my business. And so, of course, she called me, because she has more courage than I do, and I said to her, I hope we're still friends. And she said, Grandma, we will always be friends, and I love you, and I listened to what you said, and when we hung up, I did what you do a lot. It went one place to another, out the other side. And she said, and I love you, and please don't ever talk about it again. And I said, okay, I won't. I promise. So remember now, just because we're old doesn't mean, just because we're sober a long time doesn't mean there's any perfection in any of us. It's progress, not perfection. And I love it that way. I love it that way, because I don't ever want to be treated like a guru. I'm not a guru. You know, Kevin said, do you want to listen to your tapes? I said, no, I don't want to listen to my tapes, because whatever I said, I asked God for the words, whether I wrote it down or whether I'm here tonight and I'm telling you. And this is a real heavy chapter, and it's a very, very important one. Very, very important step, because the last three steps is what we do every day of our lives. And the other steps we do when things come up in our lives that we need to take a look at or need to take some action on. But these three steps keep us where we need to be spiritually, so that when the time does come, when there's something that happens, you know, we all have families, and members die, and you know, children die, and they shouldn't die before their parents, but terrible things happen. And if we don't have the spirituality to grasp on, to understand that good always comes from something that we thought was so horrible, there's always good that comes from it. And maybe we can't see it right away, but if we have that blind faith to know that He doesn't waste a second. I said He puts people in our lives for us to work on ourselves. And then once that process is over, they move on. You know, they move on. They just, it doesn't have anything to do with, I don't want to see you anymore. Nothing to do with that. It just has to do with, this was God's purpose, and He's on doing something else now. And we think about these things, and we learn how to live these things. So, now I'm going to read page 105, and then I'm done. And look at the time it is tonight. Wow. So if anybody has any questions, you'll have to talk fast. Okay, here we go, guys. Perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, and that can happen 2 days after you get sober, And, you know, I always say that, when, you know, even if you're brand new in this program, if you start becoming aware of the things that are going on around you, you'll see where he's really working in your life. The moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to Him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. That's it.
Any Thanks, questions? Beverly.
Any questions?
And now we'll open this up for questions.
Okay.
Beverly, I'm an alcoholic. You said you had premonitory dreams. How hard was it for you to deal with that? I mean, I've been having a dream for the last week, and it's been the same one over and over.
You haven't had a drink in a week?
No, I said I've had the same dream.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dream for a week. Do you talk to somebody about the dream?
Not yet.
Okay. Is that what you wanted to talk about after the meeting? Good. We'll talk about it. That's what you do when something comes up. You don't have to keep it in your head. Let it roll around. You know, and if your sponsor isn't available, you talk to somebody else that you trust. That's going to give you good advice, not bad advice. And you pick that up early on in sobriety if you keep your ears open. You're welcome.
Brian, alcoholic?
Yes, Brian.
Quickly, Beverly, I was just wondering if you could comment on what role your 11-step practices have had in your time management as you move through your years of sobriety. I used to be extremely rigidly scheduled.
Yes.
And then a bunch of things have happened that have made that pretty much impossible, and I've had to loosen up a lot, which I've had trouble with.
Yes.
And my routines of 10 and 11 look very different, and it seems that I'll be pushing towards living more by priority than a schedule.
Right.
But like, I was just wondering if you could share any experiences along those lines.
Well, I guess I can think about the job, you know, working and I have a certain set of things that I had to do, and I had to get them done. And if I didn't get them done, then I took as much time as I needed to get them done. And then that interrupted in the other areas of my life. You know, my family, my daughters, you know, I'd come home from work and that's a good question, because you know why? I had to fight with that. I am a routine person. I do the same old things all the time, and I did it when I worked. I had to. And if something got out of order and I couldn't cover it, I just went absolutely mentally, you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And it took me, after I retired, it took me about 6 months to settle down mentally, because I was so ingrained in me that it was one thing after another, after another, after another. And if I couldn't get it done today, I'm terrible. I'm terrible today. I'm a procrastinator today. I can do it tomorrow. But the living part of what the questions you're asking is very, very good. And I guess I'd have to think about it to give you some examples. But I do know that it was, I had a routine. And by gosh, if anything got in the way, I got very upset. Not at the person, but at me, you know, because I felt less than because I wasn't keeping up with what I should have been keeping up with. Does that help? Okay.
Hi, Beverly. Chuck, alcoholic.
Hi, Chuck.
This is going to sound stupid, but you brought something up during your thing about the guy, and I think it was his wife that he hated. He hated somebody.
Yes.
Well, I've got that same situation, and I hate this person 20 times more than that guy could ever have hated his wife. In fact, he lives in Chicago, and I check the internet almost weekly to see if he's dead yet or not. And and you talk about how this guy prayed. How the heck can you pray for somebody that you hate that much? Do you say that to God? Hey, God, I hate this son of a bitch, but
that's
I want to pray for him.
That's right. That's exactly the words that Gordon used in the beginning. I didn't want to say them, but you said them, and that's exactly what he said. Call him every name in the book that you can think of. God doesn't care.
I can think of a lot.
It's not what you say. It's what's in your heart. And you really want to get rid of the hate. You know, you're never going to be his friend. You might never see him again. But you want to get rid of that terrible, terrible feeling. You know, remember when we talked about when you see somebody come down the street and you want to get away across the street to get to the other side because you don't want to have anything to do with them? You want to get rid of that. You want to get rid of it so that you don't hate him anymore. Even if he was walking down the street and you had to walk by him and you stuck your nose up in the air and ignored him. You know. Yeah, but that's what we have to do. That's what you have to do. Pray for him. That's the only solution, unless you shoot him. You know.
I've been told before that that's what I need to do, and I don't know how to do it, but
just say,
I'm going to try that.
God bless. That's all you have to say.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Chuck. I guess that's it, huh?
Thanks, Beverly.
Okay, yeah.